Hey, this is Jose Gallison on No Way Jose. This will be my first episode not on the Liberty Movement YouTube channel because in this episode we're going to be doing 2020 review. And with the crazy year this has been, there's absolutely no way I can do it without while sticking to the brand of the Liberty Movement. And probably going to go a little bit in the political. As I've said before, I'm a non-voting anarchist and politics is just generally not what I care about. So it still won't be politics heavy. You're still going to be getting the kind of same thing. Just just branching out a little bit here. So my guest today is Patrick McFarlane. Patrick, you want to give a quick intro to the audience of who you are and what you're about?
Yeah, man. So
elevator pitch.
My name's Patrick McFarlane. I'm a practicing personal injury attorney. I'm also a voluntarist anarchist, and I do the Liberty Weekly podcast. I've been doing it since maybe 2017. I always forget. I always think it's longer than it really has been, but. I'm at libertyweekly.net. I talk about libertarian legal theory, and I do interviews, a whole bunch of stuff. So I also do Substack. I've been doing that lately. So, yeah, glad to be joining you.
Hell yeah. No, it's actually funny. I initially wanted to do like a bio episode with you, and then I just being a cluttered brain or whatever the fuck the saying is, I kind of didn't realize it's like this is the last episode of 2020. And it's like, how do you not do an episode of 2020? Usually I feel like that's like a hokey thing to do, like in podcasts, but in this year it's kind of like, how the fuck could you not?
Right. And I think that's so, just forgetting that it's the new year is so emblematic of 2020 because. This year just flew by. I mean, it felt like an eternity and a lifetime, but it went like that, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because it's so much happened this year, and this was the year that I've always been a current events junkie. And I've said this a few times on the show, but as of late, probably about half of this year, I just checked out. Because you got to a point where I was on overload, and it's just, like, too much to keep up with. And it's just like, you know what? I don't fucking care. Like, at some point, it's like, I got to just take care of me and my own, and, you know, like, who cares whether I'm getting 2,000 or 600? Like, you know, me bitching about it, it's not going to make a difference anyways. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, I think, oh, sorry. Go ahead. You were going to say something?
Well, I was going to say that, well, 2,000 or 600, but then, I had this conversation today with somebody at work. It was like, okay, yeah, we get 2,000 now, but our share of the national debt goes up 10 or 15,000. You know, yeah. It's just like, and, the whole thing seemed like it started off, and how long ago was this that it started off with Soleimani getting executed, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, oh god, I don't know how that didn't even come up. I remember being like enraged when that shit happened.
Right? that's such like small potatoes now. I think that happened in like July or January or February or something.
Yeah, we straight up blatantly assassinated a foreign leader, like no big whoop.
That was. Yeah.
And we forgot about it.
Yeah. That was one of the smallest things. I mean, going to the brink of a regional war that would have, another Vietnam, if not bigger. Crazy.
Yeah, no, they were really clamoring for that Iran interaction this whole year. I was blown away. That never happened. I felt like most of the year I was just like, fuck, fuck, fuck. Yeah. When is this going to happen?
I feel like it's going to happen with Biden now. I mean, there's so many flashpoints that it seems like it could turn into something.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into like kind of like going forward later. But I think there might be hope for the future. And I think maybe with a Biden, he may be a little bit of a lame duck. And then also like, is it going to be Biden? Is it going to be Kamala? Who knows?
Yeah.
Either or are both super unfavorable, so it's kind of like it's almost like you're taking the mask off Vader and kind of showing like the really hideous fuck that it is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you've been listening a lot of like Yarvin lately. That's kind of one thing he's been harping on.
I haven't quite as much. Yeah. That's Yarvin is something I know that Keith Knight. He's I guess technically spiritually the co-host of my show, but Keith is his own animal. And he did like a long interview with Yarvin.
So. Oh, I saw it. Yeah, I've been digging Yarvin. A lot of people shit on Yarvin, and I'm not. Yarvin's one of those people that like people get upset about. I don't even really know. I've never read any of his shit, so I know like people say he has like, especially like some of the blue pill lefty types are like, you know, he has problematic thinking or whatever the fuck. I don't really, really even honestly know nor care.
Right.
Like, because I, for one, even if he did, even if he was straight up like an alt-right type. If he still has something interesting to say, I want to hear it. I don't agree with everything Yarvin has to say. And he has some really interesting thoughts and things to contribute. So it's like, fuck yeah. And like, he seems to be his biggest thing that I don't like people shit on too, is but it's like public speaking. Cause they go like, and everybody makes fun of him for that. And it's like, this dude's a genius. And it's like, he just seems to have an issues with communicating. And it's like, he's, he's getting better every time, I've noticed, with every like time he's come on somewhere else. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like people shitting on him, if anything, might make him be like, well, fuck, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right. I'm guilty of that, because I do think, Pete Raymond posted something somewhere about his interview with Curtis Yarvin, or no, it was, in the Principled Libertarian, there was a post about it, and I said something about, okay, the man is obviously incredibly intelligent, but he really needs to work on his public speaking. But I'm not one to talk, because God knows I have my own vocal tics, you know? And
yeah.
but the listening experience certainly. And he's very smart. It's obvious that he is.
Yeah. And I definitely have a lot of disagreements. I mean, actually, I don't know. I mean, I still haven't don't completely entirely understand all of his thinking, but I have some disagreements. But at the same time, it's still even the disagreements he does have, it's still fascinating to see how he arrived at those conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. There's a lot of interesting stuff there. I don't even know. Do you even know the problematic things that people get butthurt about him about? I mean, I don't even really care, to be honest,
right.
But it is kind of because even if he was say he was completely for a white ethno state, I haven't heard him say it, so it's kind of even if that was a thing, it's obviously not that big of a deal. And even if he did believe that, it's okay, well, I'll just throw that part away. And even then, under if you were to go down full Hoppe, it's kind of as long as voluntary, who gives a fuck?
Right. I feel that way too. I mean, yeah. Hoppe's, I think, right up there with Rothbard. I am a student of Hoppe just as much as Rothbard. And I wanted to add that becoming an attorney doesn't humble everyone. You would think it would. It makes it go to people's heads. But for me, becoming an attorney has been immensely humbling for me, because people don't know, but when you become an attorney, you make an ass of yourself constantly, especially when you're first starting out. So one thing I've really tried to internalize is that you can learn something from everyone. And in working, with clients and everything, it humbles you. And I've really tried to take that to heart, is that no matter who it is, even if they're a terrible progressive, talking head, I'm sure there's something that you can learn if you keep your mind open.
Yeah. I mean, I agree to that to an extent, but there are some that I just I'll do my best, but I won't put myself there. For example, I used to really, really, really try to maintain a holistic view of the world, and or not a holistic view, but to be exposed to other thoughts. And so I don't necessarily not try to anymore. It's not like I'm hanging out in an echo chamber. For example, right now I'm doing an audio Noam Chomsky audiobook, just to kind of just for shits and gigs. I'm not gonna lie, I'm finding it boring as fuck. But
I saw your Facebook post about that. Yeah,
I was expecting more. I don't know why. I guess maybe it's just my thing is, maybe it's just because I'm already red pilled in the media. So this is something so long ago that's kind of oh, okay, you're just telling me shit I already know. Cool.
You think it's going to be an Edward Bernays thing, something profound and devious, but I'm sure it's just Noam Chomsky talking very slowly.
Yeah, it's just him. I mean, so far I'm halfway through. It's just repeated instances of how shitty the media is. And I'm I know.
Yeah.
Which I mean, maybe if this, I don't know when the book came out, but it was 20, 30, maybe years ago or something. It's maybe then I'd be whoa.
Yeah. I guess this brings us back a little bit to 2020, is that it's harder to red pill people now, because I mean, there's a significant segment of the population that has been red pilled. But it's harder now to impress things, because it's I don't know if this is better or worse, because people hear terrible atrocities that the media is pulling over people's eyes. And they're okay, yeah, that's what we expect. But you don't do anything about it.
It's almost you're not shocked or don't see through to this point. It's you're almost a lost cause.
Yeah, you're not going to. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's what can I even really do here? It's I don't know. Well, we're having fun here, but I think I had a point that I kind of left in the dust there. We kind of went down another rabbit trail, but whatever. We're having fun with this. South conversation.
Oh, of course.
Anyways.
Yeah.
But let's get to, because we're doing a 2020 review. So let's do both of us. I'll have you start first. We'll do kind of our breakdown, just an overview of just 2020 in review from your perspective, and do a personal and an overall, because I kind of want to hear more about your personal side of things and how it's affected you, and then kind of the overall, how you envision it, however way you want to take that.
Well, I spent most of 2020. We had our son in May of 2019, and in one way, I think it was great and convenient if it could be that COVID happened when it did, because we didn't have to worry too much about trying to have kids at home with us while we're also trying to work from home. I was in the privileged kind of white collar class where working remotely was a thing that I could do. However, my firm was one of the only firms that did go remote. Most law firms around here were deemed essential and most didn't go remote. I am not someone who is good at working remotely. I need to be in an office in order to succeed. So I think it was a real struggle to try and find that new balance. Which I don't want to make light of it, because I had a job. I didn't have any trouble paying the bills. I suppose because I was deemed essential. My sister is someone who just graduated and from undergrad, and so she wanted to go to med school, but she wasn't able. She had to find some kind of job, and now she's in a position where she's kind of struggling to figure out, you know, everything went on hold and she got her graduation stolen from her. And so those are struggles. I mean, but for ourselves, I started a lot of hobbies. It was one thing to, and maybe you can relate to this, Jose, was for so many years, a Chicken Little saying that the sky is falling, being someone who's a doomer. I've been a doomer for 4 years, and to see things actually start to happen, I've always been a kook and a conspiracy theorist, especially in the last 5 years to my family. But I think I like to think that they started taking me more seriously when all this shit started going down. So I got a lot into prepping. I grew up with guns and hunting and my family doing that. So I really embraced that hobby and kind of rediscovered it now that I have actually some like disposable income. So I got into reloading. I bought an AR, I bought an AK, I bought an SKS, I bought a concealed carry. I got for my birthday, my dad bought me a reloading kit, even though I can't find primers anymore and no one can. I started gardening. I got close to some local libertarians that we made friends. We kind of hooked up together and we're going to try to, you know, they have chickens and stuff. So we're trying to get that support network in place just in case the shit really hits the fan. And I didn't buy any gold, but I bought crypto and I started trying to trade a bit more. So those are kind of the things that I've been doing in my own personal life to kind of adapt. How about you, man?
I kind of had a lot of the same effects. I was one of the lucky ones too that I was able to work through. I mean, I'm salary, so it kind of didn't fucking matter. Like, oh, you want me to like cut down to week on, week off, or only come in these days? I don't give a shit. Like, that's fucking great. I'd rather not work and get paid anyways. So,
right.
I mean, in some ways, it kind of sucked there too, because like with my work, my name's a pseudonym, so that I have reasons that I don't go full on. But with my work, like there were some, the way my job works, like reducing us being at work made work more stressful when we were at work. So that was, I mean, I'm kind of glad things have gone back to normal in a way, because it's like, at least where I'm at in Florida, like for with my work, it's gone kind of back to normal in that way. Cause it is like, it was good for a while, but then things kind of backed up. And then it's like work slowly got more and more stressful, to where it was like, this just isn't even like, yes, I have more time off and more time with the family, but I'm like, when I am at work, I'm like way more stressed. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, like the time I had at home was fucking great. So much came out of it. Like I got to spend time with my family more. I did dabble in gardening. One story I've kind of gone to a lot with people is I did start out at the beginning. I was like the whole doomer thing. I was super black pilled, like whenever this shit was going on. And through the process, like the black pill kind of made me white pill, because the black pill caused me to get ready. And not that I'm not in any way saying that I have like stockpiles of gold or crypto or ammo or whatever, but I got more ready. I like kind of put in more of a fallback. I dabbled in gardening. I mean, I didn't get a reloading, but I panic bought an AR. So now I have an AR, I have a shotgun, I have a pistol, you know, like, and I have plenty of ammo to where, like, if I need to, I've already set up game plans with all my friends. Like, I live out kind of, I'm not in like the woods, but I literally have acres and acres and acres behind me. I own 2 acres. So like, I'm fenced in. So it's like, I already have a game plan of like, if shit pops off, like what me and my friends are going to do. So like, I got more ready. I didn't necessarily get gold or crypto at all because I don't have that kind of disposable income right now. So in my theory, when it comes to like gold, crypto, you know, stuff like that, especially if you're worried about hyperinflation, what you want is physical goods, like shit you can use. So like, you know, guns, ammo, you know, gardening tools. Like, so I got a little bit more stocked up there. Like I have a little bit of a stockpile of seeds, you know, stuff like that. Not that I'm, and like the more time goes on, the less I'm actually worried about a big collapse. If anything, it's looking more like it might be like sustained type thing. I don't know. It's going to manifest in different ways, but it's still good to have that ready just in case, because I also do think there's a good chance that going forward, it's kind of like looking at these stimuluses where they're going to kind of make us more on the teat of government. So if you can be off the teat, you're going to be less able to be controlled. So like, that's the idea essentially, you know? So yeah, I mean, overall, yeah, I got to hang out with my kids more. I'm trying to think what else. I mean, there's a lot. I started the podcast here, so I don't know if this is going to go anywhere. You know, if it does, cool. If it doesn't, whatever. I mean, I do feel like, I mean, things open other doors, you know, because like, for example, this actually started with a Facebook group, which it kind of like the Facebook group, the Liberty Movement that this started with, it fucking went gangbusters during the height of COVID, because that's when we started. It blew up, and that was before Facebook was like fucking, I don't know if Facebook got wise to like shit that was going on, but they kind of like dialed things back. Like back at the height of the COVID, I could like, for example, I put out posts today trying to get like input from people, got barely any return. If I'd done that at the height of COVID, I probably would have had 10 comments within like, you know, 20, 30 minutes. Now it's, you know, things have died down. I don't know if it's just that Facebook's put in algorithms or just less people are on it. It's just, I don't know. But point being, a lot of stuff happened. So this came out of a Facebook group, which then opened the door for this, which, I don't know. So it's like one door opens, you know, or whatever the fuck the saying is. So it'll like, you know what I mean? It's like if this just falls flat, whatever, you know, I mean, worst case scenario, I develop some more public speaking skills. But I don't know, overall, 2020's been good for me. I've actually been kind of white-pilled out of all this. I do think I do think the future is weirdly like a mix of bleak and bright at the same time. So I don't really know how to explain it other than that. So, yeah. I don't know if you want to give your thoughts overall of just the state of, not from a personal perspective, but the just overall, since we kind of didn't go into that.
Oh, yeah. I got so much, man. I wrote out a list. We were saying before we went on air that there's just so much. I mean, I'll name off the list and maybe we can choose from it. But this is the list I put together. So
let's do like an overall, just kind of
the overall. Okay.
State of the Union or whatever the fuck. And then maybe like a, I mean, obviously it's hard to encapsulate 2020. And then I figured we would go topic by topic.
Okay.
So just your overall impression of the year. I mean, I kind of gave mine a little bit there at the end. Just kind of your overall impression.
I mean, what I really think, I mean, I would say that my biggest influence is James Corbett. And he was one of the first people that I started listening to. And I really do believe that this is the ushering in of the lockdown of the human population. I really do believe that, and maybe that's a big black pill, but I'm the unprecedented degree of totalitarianism that we're walking into right now, and how easily it was ushered in, and how in a way it was just a lockstep phenomenon. And it's not the first time that we've seen a global societal shift like this towards a certain direction. So I would like to temper my words, but I've done a lot of studying recently of the propaganda efforts in Britain, specifically during World War I, to promote the war and promote the public to sell the war and to get a lot of British citizens to support the war effort and to volunteer for the services. And I mean, the parallels are uncanny, really. I mean, they're very similar, eerily similar. And the propaganda efforts in that time were just kind of in their infancy. But that has to be my highlight, is the lockstep, the handing over of liberties without a question. Some people are questioning, a surprising number of people are questioning. I think they need to get more brave, and maybe they will get more brave as they get more desperate. But I really do think it would be, if we were to go back in time and tell, you know, just even the beginning of March 2019, 2020, this year, the beginning of March, and you had said that, okay, we're going to enter a lockdown where the governors of your state are going to be able to tell you, and I'm sounding a lot like Dave Smith here, but it's a prescient point. We're going to be going into a period of time where the governors of each state are going to be telling you whether or not you can have your grandma over for dinner and whether or not she can take a piss in your guest bathroom.
On a daily basis.
Yes. No one would have believed that.
Yeah. Even here in Florida, we had the daily thing. Yeah. I kind of want to touch on something you brought up there back there. I'm trying to actually recollect it now. Oh, you kind of brought up how this has hallmarks of previous, you know, propaganda efforts. Really, we don't even have to look that far back. I know this has been brought before. This isn't an original thought, but this is just 9/11. This is 9/11 over again. 9/11 was the event that ushered in, you know, the Americans, you know, the overall consent for carte blanche for, you know, overseas, foreign, whatever the fuck they want to do. And that's kind of what this is their attempt to, you know, carte blanche, whoever they want domestically. And, you know, it's kind of them, you know, making us more dependent. But I do think they might be overdoing it. And with all the greater reset talk, and they've even brought up in some of the greater reset talk about how there'll be these people, like, you know, in the future, the 2030, I'm sure you've heard that, like John Bush, I don't know if you listen to his stuff, he brings up a lot how, like, you know, there'll be people that are, you know, living in the outskirts and their dilapidated homes or whatever the fuck, you know, not in our, you know, super state technological centers. But when he first started talking about it, it reminded me of a book. I can't remember his name. It's going to bug me now because I actually looked it up before because I had the same exact issue because I couldn't remember his name. But he, I want to say James Scott or something. He's a historian. He's like an anarchist historian. And I think it's from this book, Against the Grain, I believe. And he brought up, and it sounded exactly like that, how in the past that I think it had more to do with like how they shifted the way people ate and stuff. And like, because of that, like to like, you know, living off wheat and stuff, that kind of formed the basis for the initial societies and states. And there were people who said, fuck this. And they kind of went from they moved from the less fertile areas to being like kind of on the edges of society, kind of roughing it a little bit more. But they actually went into how they actually from, you know, looking at like, you know, it's like bones and shit like that. And just like they generally looked healthier. They seemed to, from all indications, probably have better lives. But they were actually like essentially anarchists. They weren't, I mean, I'm sure like some of them probably had more like tribe type societies and stuff, but they weren't like, you know, a state essentially, like how we see it. So, and they actually seem to thrive better than the state itself, even being in less ideal conditions. So it's like, I kind of see maybe that going forward. So, I mean, I think with that, there's hope going forward because it's like there will be the people who don't buy into it. And I mean, this also kind of ties into, I don't know if you like during this, I kind of got into agorism too, read all of Konkin's work. And a lot of this has hallmarks of the whole, like his, you know, fucking how he thinks all this, like the agorist fucking revolution will go down essentially. Like this has a lot of hallmarks of that as well, where it's like, this is almost like a faltering animal, you know, like it's dying fucking breaths, really just struggling for control. There's just so much there, and it's like almost like all of my reading that I've had over the years is kind of like coming into play in different ways, and it's kind of like just cool to see it work out in a way, but it is still also weirdly uncertain. And it's like, is my reading that the indications I'm getting from my readings gonna like, is this gonna work out the way I hope it does? I don't know. We'll fucking see.
Well, it really is strange, kind of, because you're getting this reverse kind of. What do they call it? Like the Great Migration during the Industrial Revolution, when, I mean, you had a lot of immigrants coming into the country, but you also had a lot of people that were coming from the country and migrating into the cities to work into the factories. But this is kind of the opposite of that. And I think it is. I think you're right. I think it is encouraging. But at the same time, what I always kind of thought would happen, and maybe this is a bit Alex Jonesy, but no, Corbett kind of talks about this too, where I think the future is a technocratic state where, and we are seeing this now, where this was my first theme, was the religion of scientism and trust the experts, where you're going to have an expert class, a scientific class that rules society. And these scientists and experts are going to dictate policy and shape public opinion. They already are. We're already there. But at the same time, this kind of would connote like a technocratic class, a class of elites, and you think that the elites, well, they usually live in the urban centers, or at least they have traditionally. But yeah, you get that class of elites, but they're going to get the vaccines first. That's another Pandora's box. Maybe, but they're going to be able to get the technology first and all these more modern conveniences. And it seems like the peons are going to be left behind in the dust. But I don't think that future doesn't bode well with people moving to the countryside. I don't know what you make of that.
I think, like you said, I think the propaganda is that the peons will be left to the wayside, but I think the peons are, like I was kind of getting at with how like history repeats itself and how in the past when the first states were formed, some people ditched and said, fuck this. And they went to actually what would seemingly be less and kind of in a sense was less ideal locations, but yet they thrived because they didn't have the centralized thing. So it's weird. It's almost like a twofold thing. I do feel like going forward, the state is actually in a sense kind of getting more powerful, but at the same time, they're becoming more centralized. So I think the key is to, place you and your progeny in a spot to where you will not be in those domains of power. Cause I think it'll be more like centralized, like probably more urban, you know, like it's going to be more like that. So you want to be what they're trying to make out to be the country bumpkins. They're going to be living on the outskirts. Cause I actually think they're going to be doing well. And I think history will favor them better than these will, because it's just not sustainable. It's just this dying animal trying to sustain power, and they're just centralizing it. So it appears to be they have more power, but they're having more power over a smaller location, as I think is what's going to happen. It's kind of how it appears to me, at least. I could be fucking wrong. I'm just talking out of my ass mostly.
But no, I'm just trying to think because I at least, you know, anecdotally, we have New York City will never be the same. We have people fleeing California. There's lots of urban centers in California. Maybe what's really going to happen is going to be the rise of the mid-sized city. And now the centralized political powers will just be in these cities that are between 200,000 to a million people. But there will be a lot more of them. I don't know. I'm also talking out of my ass.
Yeah, one thought I was having too, I was thinking about it. It's kind of the whole idea of like when it comes to religion and how you kind of just get what you're born into. So that's why I was kind of thinking that it's key to make sure that you set up you and your fucking your kids and their kids or whatever, just set themselves up to be in a spot where they are not in those centralized locations of, you know, intensified power of the state, which are going to be the very urban locations essentially.
Right.
Because they will, it's essentially like they're being more, if you say you lived in the urban areas or the areas that they're going to have the more control over, I feel like you're dooming your fucking, what's the word I'm looking for? You're not your ancestors, but the opposite. You're fucking your kids and their kids to be fucking essentially to be indoctrinated by the state.
Right.
Essentially, you know, like, and this is not even like a public school thought. Just, I think if you, cause like I said, I think the propaganda going forward is going to be the people who aren't in our, especially come 2030, you know, that's like way down the line. It's going to be, you know, our fucking technocratic, you know, fucking cities or whatever the fuck. I think those are going to be, you know, if you're in there, it's almost like it's too late. It's almost like being born in the Middle East. Like you're going to be a Muslim. That's just it.
Right.
And it's kind of the same idea as being in those locations. So, and I think there's going to be more of a divide going forward, and it's almost going to be, it's going to be more of a two state. There's going to be not two, but probably multiple different factions within the United States going forward. And it's not even going to be so much how it was like the Civil War before, where like North and South. It's going to be more like, I think it's more going to be like urban versus rural type deal.
Yeah.
Is the way I see it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we haven't even gotten to the meat of this. We're still the like intro of this.
I know. Right. Right. I mean, in terms of like, I don't know. What I really feel like, Jose, is like current events. We've made a list here of current events, but it's like everyone's going to be talking about current events, and we just lived through it, you know. But I like this. What we're talking about these themes, at least. What do you think?
I was actually the way it's, I kind of like we talked before, I kind of like set up a loose outline, but I kind of just wing it a little bit.
Yeah,
and this was actually literally like kind of like what I was thinking for the end. But yeah. I mean, we can kind of move through my general outline, but then kind of just move however the fuck we want.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Okay.
This is kind of like I wanted to end it on a note of like, what are we going forward? But it's right. Kind of almost hard not to talk about these things without talking about how does this work out? Because it's also like we're in this weird in between spot where like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. So right. You almost have to be like, it's a little bit of like, you don't even really know where you're at. So you kind of have to make it clear verbally to the people you're interpreter putting this out to. You have to kind of talk about where you think it could go and also where it was, as opposed right. to where you're at now. Cause it's kind of like where you're at now. It's like, it just almost doesn't even fucking make sense.
Well, again, it's so emblematic of what 2020 is. It's like, okay, oh, there's this one thing. Oh, and then another thing happened. And then this other thing. Oh, but it's all interrelated. So yeah. We're just jumping. Yeah.
So, okay. I think we did good. So let's jump into the, I was going to broke it down by certain topics, and we've kind of already touched on these a little bit, but I think that probably the top fucking thing was COVID. And so let's talk a little bit about COVID. And also let's start on lockdowns. It's kind of like how the lockdowns, just general thoughts on lockdowns. We can take this any way you want. I mean, whatever. I mean, obviously we had lockdowns. Every area is different. That's going to be my next point. I kind of want to talk about where you're at, where I'm at, and just kind of how it's, and kind of like that'll touch on themes that we had just we're talking about a minute ago about how it's like we're creating different Americas essentially.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's interesting because I think that both of our states, you're in Florida, I'm in Wisconsin, both of our states had weirdly important roles to play in the whole political lexicon that we've had in the last year. And especially as it comes, Florida's a Republican state, right? Do you have a Republican governor?
Yeah, we're Republican governor. I mean, okay. I know people always say it's a swing state, so it kind of is, but it's just still mostly just kind of like a Republican-ish state.
Okay. Well, yeah. Wisconsin, we had Governor Scott Walker, who was a Republican, but then Tony Evers won. A lot of Republicans didn't like Scott Walker, but Tony Evers, I mean, he's a progressive. He kind of toes the party line, and he's reacted to the pandemic much like every progressive, every blue state has. But I think we were important, one, because there was election fraud that was alleged in our state, which is a whole nother thing. But another one is because our Supreme Court and some of our political institutions actually did push back. And there was a recall effort. I don't know if it went anywhere. However, you know, but your state, we did lock down, and you know, there still was a mask mandate, and there was a lockdown too, of course. But in terms of like your state, Florida opened up a lot more a few months ago, right?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it never really got like too bad, and like that was kind of something that was picking up as it went on. Like I was getting, like I said early on, I got blackpilled big time, but at the same time, it never really got as crazy as I thought it was going to get. But yeah, Florida definitely didn't get as crazy. I mean, we kind of had like, I'm in Hillsborough County, which is like kind of like essentially the Tampa area.
Okay.
And I mean, I live like 45. I mean, I'm from Tampa, but I'm still in the same county. But yeah, they did like a shutdown. I want to say it was like of a week. It was like basically nothing. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it was fucking weird and kind of freaked me out a little bit. I mean, we never got too crazy. It was still like the way it worked is fucking like we were in lockdown, but you could basically go wherever. It was more the stores that were, certain stores were shut down. Like it wasn't like you were going to get pulled over for out being out and about and be like, where the fuck are you going? Papers, right. Please, you know,
papers, so, please.
Like, yeah, like, so I mean, and I think that's an interesting note to get out of 2020 of how in a weird way the state kind of flexes muscles, but at the same time it kind of showed what an ineffectual little bitch it is. So like I do think that's right. Really interesting. So I mean, it's a little bit of both, because it's almost like the state kind of like will selectively fuck with people, but it's almost like this beast that will like is actually kind of a little bitch, but will fuck with things occasionally that it can, you know, just to kind of make itself seem bigger than it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but yeah, I got a lot of notes out of that. I mean, I guess that's easy for me being in Florida, but, like, but yeah, no, it's been pretty chill. I mean, now where I'm at, like, I think technically there are like basically, I mean, I'm sure there's some rules, but I haven't really paid attention to the fucking details.
Yeah,
but
I haven't
basically
either.
There's almost no rules in Florida, essentially. But the thing is, you know, when you say that, and then now there's counties, there's cities, there's every place has their individual mandates. And so, like, technically, there's still, like, mask rules everywhere in Florida. But the great thing I've noticed in Florida is people are starting to not give a fuck. Like, I mean, the only place I really wear a mask anymore is – like even at work, they initially were mandating it. Now they don't give a fuck. They just kind of just don't. They're like, wear your mask, And they're like, well, they'll like kind of like send emails and stuff, but they'll never really do anything about it if you're not.
Right on.
It's kind of the idea that Dice has said before. It's like if you're driving down the road and the speed limit sign says 60, but everybody's driving 80 and nobody gets pulled over, it's like, well, then the speed limit's probably 80.
Right.
Like, yeah, it says 60, but that's just, that doesn't really mean anything. And it's kind of the same idea in Florida. Like, the only place I really wear it is, like, I think we're at Publix, which is our, and the only reason I even do that is because where I live is like a big retirement community. And so if anything, like, that's, it's, if anything, I do it more out of politeness, just because there are a lot of elderly people. And so it's kind of like, I know, like, even though I know the science is kind of bullshit, it's kind of like, you know, whatever, I'm not going to freak out a bunch of old people because it's literally a retirement community. So it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
But everywhere else, I pretty much don't wear it. Like,
well, and that's kind of how it bludgeons people, regular people who aren't like us, who aren't anti-authoritarian, but just regular folks who aren't either, you know, they're not order followers and they're not anti-authoritarian. They just want to live. They don't want to be uncomfortable when they go to the store, which is crazy that, you know, there's a meme that I saw is that it was people sitting down at Thanksgiving and they're all wearing hazmat suits and like respirators. And they're like, you're the crazy one. You know, it's just like around here, it's a really strange experiment in the sociology, because there's a mid-sized college town that's very close. And of course, every business there is mask, and they will actually ask you to leave if you're not wearing a mask. And just 20 minutes down the road, it's a blue collar community, and people still will wear, like, in smaller businesses, people don't care. But if you go to like a grocery store or something, everybody's wearing a mask. But I know the places where I can get away with not doing it, and I do it there. And then I just don't shop at the places where they make me do it. I got into a few confrontations that I talked about on the show. I just figured it'd be best for me not to be in that situation anymore.
Like I said, it's literally only the large places, like the Walmarts and the big shopping centers, that make a thing of it. And even then, I honestly, even like the Publix that I was talking about that I normally go to, I'd be willing to bet. Actually, I think there are a couple times I just like didn't out of habit forgot to put my mask on, because I normally just literally do it just because out of politeness for the elderly there, because I know I don't just want to freak them out. Those fuckers are probably going to die any day anyway. Right. So why freak them out?
But yeah. Like,
so yeah, I fucking, like, I know it's bullshit, but whatever, I'll do it just for their state of mind. I don't really care. Not a big deal. I mean, I normally, for my work, I have my little gator on my neck anyways, so it's not a big deal. But yeah, I normally just like, intentionally, and not that I really even care to wear it, but I intentionally, most places don't wear it. So that happened a couple times I've forgotten, and I've gone into Publix to grab one thing or another. And I don't even think maybe I've gotten like a bad look here and there, but even, and that's even in like an elderly community. So in a big place. I mean, I don't ever go to Walmart, because fuck Walmart. But like, if I did, I bet you they'd bitch, because they were the only place that I have gone a couple of times during, especially the heat of the COVID, because that's one of the only places you could go. And like, they were fucking assholes about that. They were like, they were actually being like annoying about being like, you know, oh, back away, you know, because like the whole 6 feet thing. And I was like, that like kind of pissed me off. Like, fuck you. Like,
right.
I don't know why. It's just so weird, because it is like the whole 6 feet social distancing thing really fucked me, because it just messes with normal social interactions.
Right.
Whereas like a mask, I feel like, is like, well, I disagree with it. You can kind of, it's more accommodating than the social distancing. Cause like, say you're going to the grocery store and you're like saying to grab something or do this or do that. Sometimes you just kind of move around people, or you have to like some old person that has arthritis is moving at like the speed of death. And so you got to like move around them. And it's like, it's so damn hard to keep that 6 feet thing. And like, places like Walmart were like literally being like, sir.
I've never had anyone freak out about maintaining social distance with me, but I got into a fight with someone at Papa John's, because the manager came over and asked me to leave the store because I was waiting for my pizza and I didn't have a mask on. And I told him, he said, sir, you have to leave the store. It's the law. And I wouldn't have said anything unless he said it's the law, because if I was thinking right, I told this on my podcast before, but if I was smarter and like faster on my feet, I had just put in like a 9-hour day. So I was like drained, but, I was like, I didn't say this, but I was like, it was the Nuremberg defense, and that pissed me off. It was like, I'm doing this because it's the law, and that I said, I don't give a fuck what the law is. And then he's like, okay, well, you can go outside, and we'll bring your pizza to the car. And it was fucking raining outside, and I was like, God. And then I at the local grocery store, they had one of those mask checkers at the door. And I went in without a mask on just to see what would happen if I could get away with it. And I think I told her, like, listen, I know that this is your job, but you realize that all this is going to continue until brave people do something about it. And she's like, well, sir, we got to keep everyone safe in the store. I was like, okay, so you're a fucking sheep. You don't have a brain. I was like, this lady's unreachable.
There is something to the private property argument, though. Yeah. But my thing is, like, people take it to one extreme. My thing is, like, it is kind of a gray area when it comes to the private property argument. Does that mean, like, say I set a rule in my house and I say, for example, I say, you need to take your shoes off when you come in the front door. Like, and say somebody doesn't, but I don't address it. And who is that on? Is it on me as a property owner, or is it on them, even if they clearly knew it was the rule? So, a lot of people have gone this weird, like, spot, like, oh, private property. But for me, I guess it's like, I feel like it's a gray area, and I feel like that's on the private property owner. I mean, I guess they can kick me out if they want to, but I feel like a normal human being would, it's not necessarily an NAP, like an NAP aggression to, like, continue wearing your shoes. Now, if they then do go, hey, you need to remove the shoes or get the fuck out, and if they still don't, then I think you're fully within your purview to kick them out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and even then, you don't even have to actually be like, you need to kick them out or get out. You can be like, just be like, get out. But I just feel like a lot of people think that like breaking the rule is the NAP aggression. I think the NAP aggression would be the, you know, if you didn't leave when they told you to or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I do think there. I agree with the private property argument. I guess my whole point is, and this is why I got extra pissed off at the Papa John's guy, because they are sock puppets for the state. They're carrying the state's water. The state, like you said, the state cannot enforce a speed limit of 88 miles an hour. They can't enforce a speed limit of 80 miles or, you know, 65. They can't, but they can when all the private business owners enforce it themselves. They're pushing the duty of enforcing this law onto the business owner, and the business owners are doing their bidding. They're turning into goons, and that's what pisses me off. And that's why I got really mad at Papa John's. I'm just like, I feel like a scrub.
Which I mean, to be fair, I'm assuming you left when they told you to leave. So
I did.
Whatever.
Yeah, I did. But and I think too, you know, this has been oversaid, but politics in a way are downstream of culture. I don't think that's always the case, but we need to express our preference that business owners not go along with this status policy. So that's why I think it's important to push back against it. And so here's another, this is like a very delicate segue, but here's another thing is that, yeah, and it's gone. Sorry, it's gone. I'll think of it in a second.
Yeah. Oh, I kind of want to it's actually a good spot for you to have a brain fart anyways, because now I'm remembering something I want to speak about. I was on the Last Nighters podcast, or actually the Actual Anarchy, or whatever the fuck. It's kind of confusing.
It is confusing, isn't it? Robert and Daniel, but, you scrubs.
But I was on that yesterday, and Robert was talking about the whole coup dilemma, and he was bringing up, and I thought it was genius, and he was saying how his whole – to encapsulate it, he was saying that we are the leaders and the state are the followers. It's not the other way around. Occasionally the state will try to lead, but at the end of the day, if we don't follow, they can't. So, and that kind of reminded me of how the state always works, because how it works, and he even brought this up too, was that, like, say there's a cultural trend, say, like, the best example I can think of is fucking I know there's multiple, there's hordes of examples, but the best example I can think of is like child labor. Like, at one, like, for example, fucking the state made, I don't remember when they made it legal, but when they made it illegal, at that point, it was already basically not a thing anymore. And it was just basically on the decline. So it was just like, oh, look at us. We made child labor legal. And because of that, there's no more child labor. And it's like, no, because of, you know, capitalism and, like, you know, the rising, you know, wealth of the nation, like, we have surpassed the need for child labor. And it's kind of like, that's the same idea here. Where it's like, until we start doing shit, nothing's going to change. Because if we just keep being perfect little followers and be like, well, you know, state says we do this, state says we do that, then they're going to keep going with it. Like, no matter what, people have this idea that's going to go back to normal. But until people start being like, and it's not even like great acts of defiance. I'm not saying let's go start a boog. I'm saying just simple shit like when you walk into your grocery store, maybe don't wear your mask. And then if they ask you to wear your mask, you go, oh, my bad. That simple exchange can, like, you know, multiplied a million times over by, like, you know, that spreading that changes things. Because then the next time that person doesn't want to ask, or over time, just the culture changes where people are like, oops, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. And it becomes this afterthought of like these stupid things. Oh, whatever. I'll fucking do it and make you feel good. And it's kind of, and then at that point, what'll happen is predictably the state, once the culture changes, the state will stop and be like, oh, well, now we fixed COVID and, you know, you don't got to do that anymore, and act like they were going to do it all along. And it's that's kind of the idea that's like, if we just sit on our asses waiting for the government to do something about it, it's not going to happen. We're the leaders. They're the followers. You know what I mean? Like every now and then they try to lead, but even then they're not really leading. They're trying to prevent the illusion of leading. You know what I mean?
That sounds like something Daniel would say.
It was Robert.
Oh, was it Robert? Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like Daniel, that fuck. Yeah. Hang on for a second, Jose. I want to take a break from the show to thank our newest Subscribestar supporter, Lee. Lee is the first supporter on Subscribestar, and Lee's been a listener of the show for quite some time. I really do thank you, Lee. Thanks for listening to the show for so long, and thanks for supporting us on Subscribestar. As well, if you would like to join Lee and support the show on Subscribestar, you can do so at libertyweekly.net/Subscribestar, or you can do Patreon as well. /Patreon. The tiers are the same. You can, for $3, you can get early access to show audio, a shout out like this, and a personal thank you email from me. For $5, you get access to any live streams that I do and early access to any full video versions of the show and bonus content that I do. $3 will also get you that bonus content audio. That's kind of how it works. $3 for audio, $5 for video. For $10, you get all of the above, plus joining me once on the B-Side podcast, Liberty Bigly. The Rothbard level is $15 a month, where you get all of the above, plus a topic request for the Liberty Weekly podcast. As well, at the Hoppe level, $20, you get to join me once a year for a Liberty Weekly episode. I also wanted to announce that I've been writing on Substack, so if you want to check out some articles that I've done, I also read the articles on the B-Side podcast, Liberty Bigly. That's anchor.fm/LibertyBigly, B-I-G-L-Y. But Substack, if you want to subscribe there, is libertyweekly.net/Substack. I did a piece on The Matrix, and I related it somehow to Bohemian Grove and Mark Passio, and I thought that was a lot of fun. But I bought a Raspberry Pi 3, and I've been switching my daily computing to Linux, and I'm showing people who are not tech savvy how to do the same and how to navigate Linux and get away from the big tech in the backdoor alphabet soup surveillance. So join me on there. I'm a noob. I'm not a technological person, but I think you'd enjoy that. So libertyweekly.net/Substack. I really appreciate everyone who listens to the show. Ways that you can support the show without subscribing or contributing monetarily would be, of course, to subscribe, rate, review me on iTunes, all those platforms. If you do that, send me an email and I will read your review on the show. Just let me know that you've done so. Also, share the show, subscribe, tell your friends. You know the drill. Okay, thanks so much. Really appreciate it, guys. Back to the show. Anyways, I think at some point, devil's advocate position here, if 1 or 2% of people, yeah, I saw this happening where, did you notice how the term Karen switched? How it used to refer to someone who was a snitch, and now it refers to someone who won't go along with the mandate.
And then away.
It's crazy. And what I was thinking is that on some level, it really, really... it might backfire to be the 1 or 2% of people who don't wear a mask in stores, because it doesn't make people change their mind. It doesn't. Sometimes it's like, okay, so when I'm in a store and I see a person or two not wearing a mask, I take mine off. I see nothing happening, I take it off. I'm like, fuck you people. But if you, get in a situation where you're making all of the employees pissed off at you because you're not, you know, maybe they don't like the mask order themselves, but it's their job to enforce it, then you're not really helping the case. Devil's advocate, you know, you're not really helping the culture.
I mean, yes and no, but because, like, I think you're right in a sense, but it's a matter of tact. I think a lot of people, especially like us, I'm like an ANCAP agorist type, so I'm not a fan of centrism. So, like, I know a lot of people, but in a lot of ways in life, it is about having a balance, especially when it comes to tactics. So now, like, if that's why I said before, like, just fucking a simple act of, you know, not wearing it, and when they're like, oh, sir, you need to wear it, like, oh, okay, you know, like, don't be a fucking dick. Like, I mean, I understand your thing. Like, whatever.
Say fuck you to the Papa John's store manager.
But I think generally speaking, if you're just amiable and go, oh, okay. I mean, maybe you throw in a sideways comment and not even in a passive aggressive way. Just go, oh, my bad. I just, these things are so silly. Sometimes I just forget.
Right.
Or something like that. If you just say it like that or just don't say anything. I just think over time, just a simple act of them having to remind you in their head is then making them go, oh, fuck. This is so dumb.
yeah.
Because they have, especially if you're amiable and you just go, oh, my bad. I'm sorry. You know, like, I didn't see the sign in the front or whatever, you know, like, I mean, or don't even say anything. It's like, oops, my bad. You know, like, I mean, I'm not one who really gives a shit about lying. I'm very, like, sterner in that way. And that's like, whatever. If you got to lie. I don't give a shit. But
I think that's a good point, though. You know, people who are more friendly are more, they're more persuasive. You know, and maybe if you don't have to make it a confrontation, you can make it a situation where you spark a dialogue and you can really level with someone and connect with them. Maybe that's just all sunshine and unicorn rainbows blowing out.
I think there is something to that. Just the power of the simple interaction. Like, even if you don't spark a dialogue, even if you just go simply, even simple as just, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. Even just that, you have caused them to have to exert energy to address you not wearing a mask, and you are perfectly amiable about it. And for them, that's going to make them even just a tiny little spark in their head, like, well, it wasn't even really that big of a deal. You know what I mean? Like, it makes them feel like kind of fucking an idiot, essentially, being like, why am I doing this?
Right.
And so, like, just even that simple, like, maybe they may not click for them eventually, but especially once you compound that by, if you're doing that, I guarantee you're probably not the only one they have to deal with in that day. And especially if it's more people that aren't being an asshole about it. I mean, it's one thing if they're an asshole about it, then, like, I mean, if you come at me with some shitty energy, I'm probably going to come back at you with shitty energy.
Right.
But if you're being perfectly polite and you're like, sir, you can't wear that, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, my bad. But if you're like, sir, I'm like, what?
Sir. I do think, though, that there's a certain segment of the population that are like Mark Passio has a great thing. It's something that he did a presentation about the occult. I'm not sure. Order followers in the occult. I'm not sure if you know Mark Passio.
The name rings a bell. I'm sure later I'll look like, oh shit, that's him.
So for my listener, I don't talk about him too much on the show. But for you and for my listeners and maybe your listeners who don't know him, he used to be a priest in the Church of Satan, and he turned into a voluntarist. And he goes around, he talks about natural law and does these seminars, but he has this delivery style where he will vocally, like, sit you in a chair, slap you in the face and yell at you. It's great. But he's like, no, this is how it really is. Like, they really are satanic elites, and the Church of Satan is where they recruit people, for higher levels, and they're sworn to each other by these acts. Of, you know, they get dirt on each other. Anyways, I'll put a link in the show notes page in my show. I don't want to get too far about it, but he talks about it in the seminar about order followers. And there is a certain segment of the population. Of course, we know this, being anarchists, they drift towards positions of power in politics. But there is a class of people who are psychopaths. There is a class of people who get off on ordering other people around. And there's a class of people who they gain energy by confronting people. It's not that they lose energy. You know, it's they're worn out by it. I think it's the same way introverts and extroverts. Well, there's people who thrive on confrontation and people who don't.
Yeah, I think it's about striking a balance, though, because there are people, like you said, that strive on confrontation. But it is, I think it's a very much a, it's almost like you have to learn how to play these power games where, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I prefer not to. But if someone comes at me with a certain type of energy, I'm probably going to come back at you with the same type of fucking energy, and right. I'm probably going to be better at it. So it is about just tactically being ready to be like, no, fuck you. Like, what is your deal? Like, you know, I don't know. And I guess it depends on the situation. But yeah, I get what you're saying, how there are people that come at you with a different energy and they thrive on the conflict. So you would think that that wouldn't work. But I actually think in that situation, if you can control yourself well and be the what seemingly is the victor, maybe you may not shift their thinking at all, but I guarantee you if they're coming at you with shitty, you know, energy and you're coming off as, you know, being the reasonable one to the onlookers, you're probably going to create a better. I mean, and even then to them, especially if you can outclass them at their own game, them, it's going to fuck with their head a little bit, like, oh, God damn it.
And to that point too, you know how we fashion ourselves to be these anti-authoritarian, against the grain, individualist type people. I think that in a way this last year was a real litmus test about what kind of person you are. I mean, do we sit here and do we, you know, wax on about the state and speak out against it? I mean, you listening at home, listening to this, we're on the podcast talking about it publicly. But you at home, do you practice what you preach? This is the ultimate test. Do you go out there and in the face of, you know, everyone likes to think that they're going to be the guy in that picture of at the Nazi rally where everyone else is Zeke Heiling, but he's standing there with his arms crossed disapprovingly. Everyone wants to think that they're going to be that person. But this year, you really fucking found out whether or not you're that person. Did you do anything? And I mean, I've done things where I've gone into stores, but to be completely honest, I mean, my employers, I go with the flow. Maybe that's just because I'm smart, you know, and I'm not gonna, I know where to pick my battles.
But I do think, yeah, I mean, that was one point I was gonna touch on. Like, it's not necessarily, I know a lot of people are like, oh, I'd be that fucking guy. But there's also the question of like, why be that guy? Like, I mean, I don't know what happened in that specific situation, but for all we know, that guy could have gotten taken out back and shot.
Yeah.
Was that really fucking worth it? Was that tactically in any way a benefit? If anything, you just provide an example of why they shouldn't fucking, right. You know, and that's kind of the whole idea of agorism, you know, that I've kind of gone to more this year where it's like, you kind of got to know, you got to kind of intelligently weigh your options. And it's like, do you Sig Heil here or do you not? I mean, it's like, if you're in a situation where you feel like you could not Sig Heil and, you know, be the better for it or have very little recourse, then yeah, fuck yeah. You know, say fuck you to the state in that situation. But if you're in a situation where it's going to cause more damage to you than the benefit you're going to receive from it, you're kind of a fucking idiot not to Sig Heil.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but at the same time, though, it's like, okay, well, yes, if you're in that situation and you're the only person not Sig Heiling, but what if 30% of the people around you are thinking the same thing as you? This is kind of the voting argument, though, is like, oh, well, you know, if all the libertarians in the United States thought that, oh, well, I shouldn't vote because it doesn't matter anyway statistically, then you're missing, I don't know, 4 or 8 million votes. But if everyone in that crowd, you know, if there were 30% of the people that were thinking about not Sieg Heiling, but they didn't do it because they thought that way, you know, are you? I hope you're following me.
I get that wasn't artfully worded. There's the like, oh, they're the remnant in there, but right. I think it's not always easy. And I know a lot of times we like to boil things down to simple propositions like the NAP, like am I aggressing against you or are you not? But sometimes it's a matter of tactics, and it's just a matter of like you gotta, you know, when no one to hold them, no one to fold them type deal.
Right.
And a lot of times it is just that, like, for example, in that Sieg Heil, I actually, like, especially after reading like Stirner and like some other characters, like I've kind of come to the conclusion of like, you know, morals are kind of this overrated thing. So it's like, to some extent, you kind of got to look out for yourself. And then that kind of compounds when everyone's looking out for themselves. It's kind of the whole Randian and Stirner idea of like, when everyone's individually looking out for themselves, it's kind of it's the idea of anarchy in general, you know, that when you compound that all together, it actually works out for the greater good. It's the funny thing, the irony of it all is the greater good argument actually ends up working out for the greater bad. you know, when people say the greater good, it usually does not end up working out for the greater good. Mm-hmm. So, but when people are looking out for individuals and then they're in their circles of influence or whatever, then it generally works out better. But yeah, the point I'm getting at is like fucking, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like sometimes you're just an idiot to do some shit. Like, and it's not as simple as just like, that's bad and that's good. Sometimes it's, there's far more that goes into it, which is why it's very important to be a, I don't know, a smart individual, essentially, and I guess that's not the greatest, you know, fucking, so the greatest message for the masses, because the masses are fucking idiots. So like, right. But as individuals, you really need to, I mean, one of my prime like things I've always said, and I always said to my kids, is strong body, strong mind, you know, strong person. So it's like, you need to be strong in every way you can. So that way it's just like, and that's one of them. It's like, cause there is so much to, when it comes to just simple shit like that, like it's like game theory. It's fucking, you know, it's morals. It's all sorts of things. It's not as simple as just, well, that's bad and that's good. And I think a lot of times, especially like where I said with like Stirner and morals, you boil it down to morals. And sometimes that just restricts you to a point where you're just like, it just doesn't make sense. It's kind of the idea of like, you probably respect, like one thing Stirner went to and I thought was really smart. And it's like how we swear an oath when we when we go in court or whatever. And it's kind of like, so Stirner's point was kind of like, so fucking what? Like, really, you would fuck yourself over for what? Some words?
Right.
Why?
I mean, I see this all the time where, you know, for instance, I mean, just this week I had a client, one of my clients was deposed yesterday, and this idea of perjury, you swear to tell the truth, but the truth can be so obfuscated by what the question is. I mean, depending on how you interpret a question, your answer could be a lie. I guess it's not okay. You shouldn't knowingly perjure.
I don't even care. I actually say you should if it benefits you.
Right.
But that's just my perspective.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to knowingly fucking condemn myself, especially to the state.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you have your Fifth Amendment right for that reason. But no, here, yeah. For instance, a direct example of this is my client was asked, did you speak to anyone else about the crash other than those people who were directly involved, was kind of the question. And it was a bad question, because how do you find direct involvement? How do you define direct involvement? if you don't answer that question completely, well, he could cross-examine you during trial and say, oh, she didn't mention emailing this one person, so she's lying. She's a liar. Why didn't you say that during your deposition? Well, the answer is because I didn't understand your fucking question. You know, is that perjury? Yeah. Are you lying in that situation? Right. Essentially, you're right. There's no black and white in that situation. It's yeah. Shades.
It is funny because like being us as anarchists, I do feel like we have a tendency to boil things down to black and white. At the same time, yeah. You have to realize not everything is black and white, especially when it comes to stuff like that. Because I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes to like what is permissible, it's like we go with the NAP, you know, like what justifies violence in return is what the NAP is. But for the most part, damn near everything else is fucking gray. And even then with the NAP, there's still all sorts of loads of shitload of gray, because it's like, you know, say someone does break the NAP against you, do you really have carte blanche to just fucking, you know, just cut their head off? Like, mm-hmm. Not really. I mean, you kind of got to respond proportionally. Like, for example, a good example of this is it's silly, but the sweet tea thing or the twisted tea meme going around.
I don't even know what that's about. I've been buried in work the last few days, but when did that come out?
It's actually pretty hilarious, but there's this guy, it's just this convenience store thing, and this guy, this like white dude is like keeps calling this one guy the N-word, but he's like saying he's saying it like with an A, so he's not like saying it in that, but he's like, you know, people joke saying he thought he had a hood pass, but but he kept being like, he was being really belligerent and be like, hit me, and like was trying to get him to hit him, and then he at one point the guy dropped his twisted tea or whatever, and then the guy kicked his hand, not hard, almost like a little bit between aggressive and playful, somewhere in between there. And then that's when the guy just wham, just smacked him in the face with the twisted tee. So technically, you can look at it multiple ways, and where the white guy aggressed against him by kicking him, even though it wasn't a very hard kick. It was almost like this weird, like, somewhere between aggression and playful. The guy was clearly, like, drunk or high or something. And then, so there's that, where he technically aggressed against the black guy. And then the black guy just then, like, there's probably a case to be made that, like, even under NAP, he responded disproportionately. Because he's wailed the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
And he beat the shit out of him. And I mean, I guess I wouldn't say he beat the shit out of him. He then, like, kind of held him down and punched him a bunch until the guy kind of, like, subdued him. Was like, all right. And and then also there's a case to be made, too, that he fucking, because he said, hit me. There's, like,
that's consent.
You know, it's a whole, yeah, it's a consent. It's kind of the whole, like, duel thing. I mean, obviously, right. He's kind of being a smart ass.
Mutual,
so it's, like,
combat.
Really consent? I don't know.
Well, I think, not to go down a rabbit hole here, I mean, this is my shtick, I guess, is that's why you need a common law court system where courts, they have the NAP as a guidepost. But what they do is they take a look at specific individual cases and they determine, you know, exactly what the NAP means in that context. Then you have a body of a string of decisions where things are interpreted a certain way. And that's also the beauty of having a jury. And Lysander Spooner talked about this a lot in Trial by Jury, which I did an episode about that on Liberty Weekly. I'll put it in the show notes page. Just making work for myself here. But a jury is basically, you know, being, they have a more subjective localized interpretation of what things mean. So that's why, you know, people employ, our Western system employs a jury like that. But anyways, I'm gonna get off my soapbox.
It's actually funny. You were mentioning jury, and then my immediate thought, we were just talking about the Twisted Tea meme, and it completely brought it back to, like, you were talking about the jury, and just reminded me of a whole other modern day, you know, not necessarily a meme, just reminded me how, like, you know, the whole meme going around of, like, Among Us, and how it, like, proved that jury system is flawed.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's not a perfect system.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, but... That's the thing too, is people accuse anarchists of being utopians, but it's like, we're not even
saying it's,
we're
perfect.
Not even necessarily, yeah, utopians. We're just, this is preferable. So that's really the idea, is like the idea of, like, Ancapistan is preferable to the state. And so we would still have court systems, and they wouldn't be perfect either, but yeah, it'd be preferable. And it would ideally be situated in a system of voluntarism, to where, you know, every interaction was voluntary. So
see, this is my idea, is having a class of professional jurors who would be free agents that litigants would choose to have them sit on the jury and be the finder of fact. And if a jury was accused of jury, professional juror was being accused of anything, well, then they'd lose business. You know, it's that free market system for. Anyways, I should expound upon that in one of these episodes. I'd have Kinsella on, and he'd tell me why I'm an idiot.
I mean, it's one of those things, though, where, like, I feel like people too often, whenever you're like, oh, Ancapistan, I'm an anarchist, and they're like, well, how would this work, or how would that work?
It's like, yeah.
I don't fucking know. It's like, how does a fucking computer work? I don't fucking know. But
right.
The free
Do you
market
know?
Makes it happen, and they've, you know, the system that, you know, is more conducive to the masses or whatever the fuck, or works the best, is more efficient, is generally what ends up, you know, winning out. And even that, not necessarily winning out. There usually is multiple options. There's here's your affordable, you know, computer. Here's your streaming computer. Right. Here's your gaming computer. So it's like, I mean, the free market generally works out. It's more just the conglomerate of everyone's ideas coming together. Whereas instead of just, I don't know, it's like, why are you expecting me just to have the idea? Like, which I guess I kind of understand in a sense, because it's kind of like, you want to upend all of this. And it's like, so, but you have no solution. And you're just like, well, it's fucking the invisible hand.
how would shoes be made if not for the government monopolizing the shoe industry?
Exactly. Shit, we are fucking, this may end up being a two-parter. We have to find some time to do like a part.
It's all right, man.
Wait, let's touch on stimuluses. What are your thoughts on stimulus? Let's go down that road. We're still on, I had four main topics, and I thought I didn't have enough. We're still on the first one.
I know, right, man? No, I think it's good, because I really enjoy the episodes. Even if we go off on rabbit holes, it's such organic conversation.
Yeah.
Stimulus, so specifically with stimulus, Walter Block made a decent argument, as he often does, and one that's controversial. But when this was all starting out, and I think Bob Murphy said this too, so not an original thought, but if you are going to take away someone's right to work, you better compensate them for it. There's a libertarian argument to be made that if you're going to forcibly prevent me from working, then you should compensate me for it. It's kind of like the takings clause, in a certain way, of the Constitution. But then again, you're stealing from everyone else or debasing the currency and making their money in their pocket worth less in order to compensate this person for not working. So there's an argument to be made there. I was talking with the same person this morning at work about this, saying that, okay, and I said this, I think I just said this on the show, the stimulus comes and it's $2,000, but you and your children are indebted $20,000 more per person on the national debt. And we're going to print away the deficit until it doesn't matter. That was another one of my, I put in my themes, universal basic income test run, which I think this is the direct payments is. And also deficits don't matter. We've been saying that for years and years, but the national debt went up by what, $3 trillion this year, something like that. At some point, the roosters are going to come home to roost. I think that's the saying. And people are going to see that the emperor has no clothes and the dollar is going to become worthless. And at that point, are they going to usher in something else? I think it's part of the global paradigm shift.
Yeah, I'm not an economic genius, but I have noticed that when they do these stimulus packages, a lot of the, and also even before this, they were printing money like gangbusters before we even had the COVID or all the fucking the stock market craziness. A lot of the money was going to stocks. So that's like the big thing, it seems to be, where they're like, we need to put money in stocks. We need to put money in stocks, which is, for one, it's multi-pronged. It's like, obviously, like, you, I feel like this creates this artificial thing that makes us, a society, feel like they're doing better than they are when you have a good stock market. But then also at the same time, it's, you can hide so much money in the stock market. So it's like, if you're going to print money, a good place to place it is the stock market, because it's kind of just there. And you're also creating, you're creating confidence in the stock market as you're printing more money in the stock market. So thus making more people buy into the stock market. But it's this whole house of cards. So it's just a matter of like, when does the fucking, you know, the one card fall? And it's like, so now we have, because like people, we, the big concern was hyperinflation. But it's like, for one, I mean, obviously, it's, there's a lot of like overseas, and there's also a lot in the stocks, where it's like they put so much in stocks. So much of that money is just hidden in stocks. So where it's like, but at some point, I mean, like, I don't know when, at some point that liquidity, or that like liquidity, is going to get released and come into the market, and it's going to affect prices. I mean, it's already has. I mean, not a ton, but I mean, I know I noticed from like grocery shopping and shit, shit's gone up a little bit. I mean, I feel like everything's gone up a little bit. You know, but it's not at all what I thought it was going to be. I was super concerned about hyperinflation when all this is going on. I still kind of am, but it's like, I don't know. Also, God, what did I want to touch on? There's something you said earlier that I'm kind of drawing a blank on what it was. There was some, all right, whatever. You got anything to go on? Maybe it'll come back.
I think it's 11 o'clock where you're at, isn't it? The clock just changed. So, well, I mean, I think, at some point, this is a thing with the Austrians, is that you can't really say, you can say what the end result of a given policy must be. And I think all the Austrians are really seem like they are surprised that the show has gone on this long. And I think there's something to be said when it comes to the purchasing power. And of course, I'm just an armchair economist, but there's something to be said that, you know, relative to the other currencies of the world, the dollar is still very strong. I think that's the case. And it seems like, well, I don't know. And the dollar is strong compared to what? Is it strong compared to other currencies? Is it strong compared to goods and services? I guess at the end of the day, that's really what matters. Yeah.
And even then, that all that's a house of cards as well, because that is, we are the reserve currency kinds. We're the big dick swinging in the room. We're the ones who go in and fuck over all these other nations. We come in, we rebuild the nation, and we go, okay, well, now you have to buy your gas in fucking US dollars or whatever, or you have to buy this. And so it's like, we create this artificial usage of the dollar, and it's this, like, the whole empire game, really, in a nutshell, is like, we're trying to maintain our dominance. At some point, it's going to thin out. You can't do it forever. It's just like you can only play this house of cards to a certain point.
Right.
Now I remember the point I was getting at too, yeah. Where you were kind of getting at how like it's like we got to recompense these people, a recompense, or whatever the fuck you say it, but you got to give these people back their money. And I completely agree. Like in a fair system, you give these people money, but if anything, you're actually fucking these people over more because like, for example, this one's a good example, the $600 stimulus we're getting. I don't remember the overall, like, I think I broke it down as like, I did the math initially when I don't know if the numbers have changed because I think they probably have like altered it since then. But essentially, $600 is like I think less than 25% of the thing.
Right.
So the other 75% is just going to I don't fucking know. Probably like the stocks, big businesses, right. Just that. So it kind of actually kind of plays into the lefties' fucking game of how they're like this, you know, inequality or whatever. And that's legit. They are creating inequality. They are essentially trapping parts of the. They're like essentially. Capping off one side of the economics or the economic class or whatever to be have more of this money. So you think, cool, I'm getting $600, but it's like, yeah, but it's kind of a disadvantage in a sense because you're getting $600, but they're increasing the money supply and then giving more of the money to the higher class.
Right.
So there is some truth to what the lefties say there. And it's like, yeah, because when you print the money and you give more of it to the upper class, you're trapping money up there, which isn't going to you. Eventually, it will, you know, people always tease trickle down economics. There is some truth to it. Eventually, that money will trickle down.
Right.
But if you had just given out evenly, that never would have been an issue.
There's some question about, I don't know if it was Mises or Rothbard who said that. I think it was Rothbard in his one of the first books that I read. This idea that when you're giving helicopter money and you're giving it to Wall Street, they get to enjoy the higher dollar value, the relative
before the inflation hits.
Right, before the inflation hits, which is interesting though, because we are getting direct payments directly to citizens. So maybe we're going to enjoy the high purchasing power before inflation hits. But it's almost like Weimar Republic where you have the wheelbarrow full of cash and you get it from the bank in the morning and you have to take it right to the bakery because if you don't, the wheelbarrow will not buy the bread anymore.
Yeah, but if you give, say you give $500 to the peasants, but you give $1,500 to the big dogs each.
Yeah.
You know, that's not as in a perfect breakdown of how it works. And yes, you do have the initial purchasing power, but they have more money with which to use that initial purchasing power before the dollar is devalued. So it actually will still, in the end, benefits them more.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it does mitigate it a little bit. If anything, it just kind of gives them that like credence of like, look, we gave you money. But it's like, no, you really, it looks like you gave us money, but you actually fucked us over. So it's like you sort of... But in the long run, you're actually screwing me over even more.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yes, it's not really. And I guess I know people are like, oh, well, like, if it was, say they did genuinely just give $600 to every citizen or whatever the fuck,
mm-hmm.
and that would be okay. That's fair. Yes, I get it. You're going to have to, this is something they're printing money and you're going to have to pay interest for later, whatever. I guess ideally, in a perfect world, or not even a perfect world, it's still not even perfect. They would just like, not tax you or give you back your taxes or whatever the fuck. And you know, cause then you don't even have to worry about that whole like loan thing, you know, cause it's like, you're basically getting on loan from the Federal Reserve. But in that situation, at least it's fair. Yes. You're getting $600, but you're essentially taking on a $600 loan in a time you need it with a certain percentage on it, essentially is basically what it is. Whereas now we're essentially taking out, I don't know, just quick and fast math. I don't know. We'll say you're getting $500, but you're taking out a $2,000 loan with interest on it. It's not a good deal.
Yeah, right.
Like, you're getting fucked over more than you were back from.
And I mean, I'm so guilty.
At least you can justify the time preference, you know?
Right. Well, I'm so guilty. No, I'm so guilty of it too, because I'm like, now what kind of ammo am I going to get with this? Or, you know, am I going to upgrade my PC, or what am I going to do with this money? Am I going to save it or buy Bitcoin or what?
Oh, yeah. I'm not advocating turning away the money. That's retarded.
No, I'm not either. No,
overall,
no.
Like,
don't get me wrong. I'm not either. But at the same time, I'm like, ooh, anticipating it. Like, oh, $2,000. Huh. You know?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't think it's smart, but I'm at the point where I kind of don't fucking care. I'm kind of, in a sense, a little bit kind of collapsitarian because I have a 10-year-old and I have an 8-year-old. I'm kind of almost like, part of me is like, print that money, baby. Fucking print, print, print.
Yeah.
Print, print, print. Because I'm like, if anything, I want them to overdo it. I want them to collapse like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, I want this bitch to go down. And the only reason is, for me, I guess it's kind of selfish because it's like, I mean, not necessarily that I'm in a perfect position to endure a collapse, but I have children. And the way I see it now is it's more likely going to impact them as young adults. So if anything, I'd be like, right. Fucking just go wild. Fucking, I'd rather this fucking whole goddamn experiment implode before they have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a little bit selfish. If I didn't have children, I probably wouldn't have that perspective. That's just me. For me, I'm like, I understand the economic, how it's shitty, but it's kind of almost this inevitability in my mind. I'm like, just fucking do it. Yep. Fucking print away. Give me money. Let's do it. And I'm going to fucking, you know, do smart shit with that money to, you know, make sure I'm set. So
I worry,
give me all the money.
I do worry about like this concept of, it's kind of like an occult concept of order out of chaos. And I'm wondering if it seems that things have gotten so cartoonish that it's almost on purpose. You know,
yeah.
This
$600 was like, I couldn't believe, like, $600? Like, if real, like, this is like your kind of almost spitting in people's face. It's like, right. What is that? That's like, for your normal family, that's like a little bit more than their 1 month of their car payments, because like in a two car family. So yeah. It's like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I guess that doesn't really apply, because you know, you each get $600 and it's like, I think you get money for your kids or whatever, but still, it's like nothing. Especially like, I mean, especially in most states where it's like they've been shut down, like what does this do? I mean, I don't know what the deal is with like rent and mortgage. I've been paying my mortgage through all this, but mm-hmm. I mean, I'm assuming if I want to, I probably could apply for some sort of program for mortgage forgiveness. I don't know what the deal is with all that right now. But even then, still, it's like, it's just, that's like $600 is fucking nothing. That's like a third, like here in Tampa, like your normal rent for most places is probably gonna be like, oh, $1,500 ish.
Yeah.
So that's not even 50% of your rent.
I think my mortgage is like $850 a month. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, you're in the Midwest, but like,
that's true.
So yeah, I mean, but even then, it doesn't cover your rent.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Of
for
course.
1 month.
So, yeah.
Like, how long has this been? How long has it been since the last stimulus? And how long has it been shut down? The idea is that it's like, this is supposed to help get through this. And it's like, a lot of people just haven't been working. So it's like, what are these people doing? Like, I'm really surprised. Like, I was a little bit, like, at the beginning of the year, I was more of, like, a boog boy in a sense. I've kind of, like, shifted my thinking. I mean, I wasn't, like, one that's, like, 1776, like,
well, come
like an ANCAP boog boy where, like, I just saw as an inevitability.
Yeah.
So, like, let's fucking do it.
Just do it and get it over with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now I'm not about that. I could see, I prefer, like, a peaceful one.
Yeah.
And I honestly, the boog is becoming more and more, like, just, like, a joke. Like, it's not going to fucking happen.
Yeah, I think when the boog boys largely came out in support of Black Lives Matter is really when I kind of set that aside. Because, I don't know how you can support people who are burning down business. There was one point, maybe a couple instances, where at least in Minneapolis they burned down the police department. But other than that, I couldn't really get behind that.
Ooh, that was one I want to get into, because we're probably gonna have to cut it short here in a bit, and maybe we can see if we can schedule something. We may have to like pretend like it's still 2020 and do it in 2021.
We could do that. We could totally do that.
I did want to get into that because I kind of fell victim that I was still a little bit in that big boy mentality. I kind of wasn't entirely when that shit was popping off. But there was, to be fair, my thinking whenever that first all the riots and stuff kicked off, initially there was this energy of fuck the state. And there was this small moment of time where there's this weird unity between like the BLM types and like some of the liberty types where they're like, yeah, these guys are fucking you over. Fuck them. But then somehow that energy got twisted into like, fuck the bourgeoisie.
Right. Like, and I don't want to say
burning down police stations. I was like, fuck. Yes.
I don't want to say that was by design. I always like, I don't know. I'm such a conspiracy theorist, but it's like, you know, was that by design? Did this happen on purpose? And maybe this is a good theme to end on, but I remember so many different opinion changes and shifts as different things were presented. It was a whirlwind about how I changed my mind as I learned more about this and thought more about it. And I can't say I disagree with your take on, you know, when these riots first started it seemed like it was something that could pop off into something that could be anti-state. But then it just, yeah.
Yeah, no, it went a different way. And I feel like the big thing for like the liberty community or whatever you want to call it was that jumping off point, because a lot of people had already kind of in a sense made their bed. And it was like, you didn't want to have this dirty face of being like, nah, fuck this. And like, I guess it was more about of drawing the line. And I feel like a lot of people didn't have those consistent principles of like where they drew the line. And so they stuck around and being like, yeah. And they found a million different ways to justify what they were doing. And then like, they just found themselves doing mental gymnastics to justify it. Like, oh, well, you know, these guys have insurance or fucking, or that's the movement, not the or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, people found ways to justify in so many different ways, like, oh well, BLM the movement or BLM the fucking, you know, organization. And it's like, at some point it's like, and dude, like, it's so silly too, because it was also hard for us liberty types, because it was like this weird thing where like, oh, are you racist? It's like, no, I just don't like fucking, I don't support, you know, aggression against people who haven't aggressed against anyone. It's as simple as that. I mean, but now the state, I mean, like, I'm not saying go burn down your police station, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Right.
Like, if you do, I mean, okay.
I will say I did get excited at the prospect of rooftop Asian type situation, or, you know, like the LA riots. Oh, I don't know, man. It's just, I will say I do disagree with Dave. I don't disagree with Dave Smith often, but I do disagree because he said that, oh, well, the riots weren't about, they weren't about Black Lives Matter and they weren't about George Floyd and police brutality. They were about people being cooped up, having no hope and being locked up. You know, I don't know if I disagree with that. I think that it, I don't know if I agree with it. I do think that, you know, maybe being locked up had something to do with kindling for the situation. But I truly do believe that a lot of the people that were out there were just plain criminals and they like to do that kind of thing. But a lot of them really were pissed off about police brutality or perceived institutional racism.
I think it was both. I don't think that would have ever manifested the way it did if it wasn't for the current situation. So I get what you're saying. And I do think it was because of it, but I think there were more people paying attention, more people in a situation where they felt like they had nothing to lose. And so they're like, fuck these people fucking me over right now. You know, like, cause they identified some sort of enemy. The issue was, do we identify the enemy as a state? Do we identify the enemy as the upper class? It was this weird, like, not this clear enemy. And they were looking for something to rage against, and what they chose to rage against was not what needed to be raged against. If anything, they created allowed the state to grow in a lot of ways. So, cause I mean, they just let essentially most places is the police just stood by and just fucking, I mean, initially there were some like police were like, holy fuck. Cause they weren't expecting it. But then after they got wise to it, most police station stuff were just like chilling out. Just got away from it, let them burn the fucking city down, and then be like, we need a bigger budget.
Right. Shit. I mean, can you believe the audacity of it? Cops enforce the lockdowns, and then they're doing exactly what they're not supposed to be doing, according to the status, like, starry-eyed view of what the police are. And then when they're called upon to do, like, exactly what they're supposed to be doing, which is protecting private property, they stand by and they're like, oh, I guess we can't prevent this. We're not going to do anything about this. It's just infuriating.
Yeah, I think we're at a good point to stop.
I think so too.
An hour and a half.
Yeah.
We have at least one or two more episodes in here. So I think at least one of these, we're just going to pretend it's still 2020. Cause I don't know how it's going to work. We got like a quarter of the way into the shit I want to do. And I thought we didn't have enough. So I'm kind of glad this worked out this way. You want to drop whatever plugs you got right now?
Yeah. Well, check
the description as well.
Check me out at, put it in the description and then I'll put it in my show notes page. Cause we'll cross post this, libertyweekly.net. If you want to join me on Discord or Substack, I do / Discord Substack. I think Twitter, all the platforms should be like quick linked there. So check me out. That should be the gateway for everything Liberty Weekly.
Okay, cool. For me, I mean, it's always in the video description, but obviously we've got the YouTube channel that I'm on right now. I usually most of my content goes up in the Liberty Movement, but I'm starting to diversify and I'm going to do a little bit more political stuff. I'm probably still going to do most of my stuff is still going to be the Liberty Movement, but I'm going to have some stuff here. So if you're interested in that stuff as well, pop on this channel, give it a sub. I also am basically every podcatcher available. So, I mean, that's all going to be the video description, all the individual links for each one. The Liberty Movement's also got a BitChute, so if you want to go to BitChute and follow me there, at some point I'll figure out library or some shit. Like I said, all this is gonna be a video description, so like, share, subscribe, all that good shit. Looks like we're gonna have some more here. So this has been fun. It's been really great fucking shooting the shit. This went a lot of different ways I didn't think it would go.
Yeah, for
sure.
So
I was worried we weren't gonna have enough content, but we got through like one out of four of my points.
Well, I think it's great because I think we tackled a lot of things that people are talking about in their New Year's episode, but we talked about it from a different angle. And there's a lot of stuff we talked about that other people haven't talked about. So I think that's great.
Yeah. So, all right. With that, I'm going to deuce out. We'll try to figure out time to schedule it. I'm a pretty busy guy. So I don't know when I'll get to you, but either way, it'll be fun. So
Yeah. Well, thanks, brother. It was great to meet you.
Sorry, you cut out there. What'd you say?
Oh, sorry. It was great to meet you, brother.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. Like I said, I wanted to do a bio episode, but it was almost kind of more fun just jumping in head first here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into another episode. One of the reasons I want to do a bio is because I'm kind of interested in how an anarchist and a lawyer kind of work together.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll talk about that later because we're going to keep rambling and fucking we'll never stop. But yeah. I'm trying to drop this tonight.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I feel you.
So, all right. I'll let you go. Oh, yeah, like, share, subscribe, all that good shit, or don't, whatever, I don't fucking care. All right, we'll see you.
All right, later.